All right, so lots happening in the legal world these days. At least, I mean, way more than I can cover, but three things of interest to me. First of all, Greenpeace. It's been a long time coming, but the last month, a North Dakota judge, he finalized a jury award against Greenpeace. They're supposed to pay $345 million to a big oil company, Energy Transfer Partners. That's the company owned by Kelsey Warren, who's behind the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, I'm no fan of the national nonprofit industrial complex. I mean, some of them do good work, but they've got a corporate structure that is extremely expensive, gets a lot less done, in my opinion, than what local groups can do on a much smaller budget. And partly because, you know, you don't have people working at a local level who are paid $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 even a year, which to me is obscene. So anyway, how this all got started was back during the struggle against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which was very prominent here in Iowa and in North Dakota, famously with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Energy Transfer sued Greenpeace and Bold Iowa. They sued us and a couple other nonprofits. They alleged that we were, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous. It was kind of almost that we were racketeering, that we were basically impacting their ability to do the work that they were legally allowed to do. And interesting, not surprisingly, you know, the other groups, Bold Iowa and other groups named in the lawsuit, were kind of forgotten. We were the small groups, the little stuff. Greenpeace was the big group that had all the money, so that's ETP, Energy Transfer, went after Greenpeace. And, you know, interestingly, I was very intimately involved with that whole struggle from even way before Standing Rock began. I mean, I started my activity on behalf of that that fight started in January of 2015, shortly after I got back from the Great March for Climate Action, and it started with a 400-mile walk from southeast Iowa to northwest Iowa, following the route of the proposed pipeline at the time, meeting with landowners, others who lived along the route, to understand where they were coming from and to share my concerns and to try to share, you know, what I was hearing from one farmer in one community with what another community might not have learned. Long story. But anyway, I was very involved with that whole situation. And I can tell you there were a lot of other groups that were playing a key role. Greenpeace was not one of them. Greenpeace was only minimally involved. And so that Energy Transfer should decide to sue Greenpeace, I mean, it was clearly all about the money. Now, this might bankrupt Greenpeace. I don't know. We'll see. They are going to file an appeal, of course. I wonder how much they're spending. I mean, Energy Transfer has, Kelsey Warren is one of the richest guys in the country. And he has bottomless, capacity to file lawsuits. And to be clear, this is what is often called a SLAP suit. That stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. It's a type of lawsuit filed by a big company to shut people up, to basically suppress the First Amendment, to get you to go away and not bother them. And I've had other SLAP suits filed against me. They were dismissed because they're basically unfounded. There's no substance to them, but they're an attempt to get you to shut up and go away. Now, again, I wonder how much Greenpeace has had to spend fighting these. I don't know. But it's wrong, and we'll see where it goes. So the court ruling on Department of Homeland Security, I like this one. And it's almost a moot point now because Noem is out as the ice queen. We could have more conversation about that. But just looking at this court ruling, last week, first week of March, a federal judge blocked a Department of Homeland Security policy that was used to prevent three Congress members, all Congresswomen from Minnesota, three members of Congress from touring a detention facility in Minnesota. They showed up. They were originally going to be let in, but someone there must have called Noem or some higher authority, and they said no. apparently, in the reason they gave was a Department of Homeland Security had somewhat randomly put together a requirement that members of Congress need to provide 7 days' notice before conducting an oversight visit at a facility where immigrants are being detained, or actually, let's admit it, American citizens are being detained. Now, okay, think of how ridiculous that is. You know, even if I were to give you a two-hour warning, you might be able to clean up your act, right? But 7 days? I mean, it's ridiculous. There's no point in conducting an oversight visit if you don't have the element of surprise. And I learned that from experience as a state lawmaker when it came to Iowa prisons and private nursing homes. There was a nursing home in my district. It was about a two-mile walk to the state capitol from where I lived. And I'd heard complaints about this facility, privately owned, but funded with a lot of state money and some federal money. So because it was funded with state money, I, as a lawmaker, was allowed to pop in and visit. And one cold day, walking home from the Capitol, I said, hey, I'm going to pop in, see what I can find. And the staff was very unhappy that I was there, but they knew that they couldn't say no. And so I remember just going out and checking out the different floors where people were at. And I remember one of them, there was a bin in the hallway that as soon as I got off the elevator, it was horrible. The stench of urine-soaked sheets in the hallway in this bin, which it was overwhelming. I remember poking into some of the rooms of some of the residents, horrible conditions. I mean, it led to a deeper investigation. And, you know, when I went to prisons, the first time I went to a prison, they didn't allow me in. So I came back the very next day with a copy of the Iowa Code saying, here's where it says that I can come in and visit any prison or any prisoner at any reasonable hour. You need to let me in. I had the code right in front of me. Actually, it was the element of the code. And so they let me in. And again, I found a lot of things that needed improving at the Iowa State prisons. But my point is that this is a good ruling by the courts, because the Department of Homeland Security should have no business preventing members of Congress who oversee its funding from coming in and seeing what's going on. All right. I told you I was going to talk about three court rulings, two that I like. Here's the other one. And this is kind of incredible that this is even happening, but there's a gambling and prediction business. It's called Polymarket. And again, gambling in the U.S. is off the charts. You can bet on anything these days. It's not just like sports betting anymore. It's crazy stuff. Like, when will a nuclear bomb be detonated between now and 2027? I'm not making this up. This is an actual thing you can bet on. When will the next nuclear bomb go off? And there are people betting on this to the tune of $900,000. That's how money has been wagered on when a nuclear bomb will be dropped this year, before the turn of the year in 2027. I mean, and I guess that particular market within Polymart is called nuclear detonation by ... question mark. I mean, you have to have nothing better to do with your life. You have to have a horrible view of the universe to want to go and wager money on when a nuclear bomb will be dropped. And thankfully, there was a court ruling that said, no, you can't have wagers on that. And there was a great story in The Lever about this. That's where I learned about it. And the quote from The Lever that I want to share with you goes, "The debate on whether prediction markets encourage insider trading on war, death, and geopolitical violence is heating up, especially after hundreds of millions of dollars flowed into bets tied to U.S. strikes in Iran and Venezuela." Yeah, does America and perhaps the human species have a gambling problem? Well, you betcha. But again, I'm glad for the court ruling. But, you know, this whole issue of wagering on insane things like a nuclear bomb going off, we should have a deeper conversation about how much of that should even be legal. Okay. I want to talk about, switching gears, about pesticides and cancer. And this is a bad news, good news story. The bad news is that Iowa My home state is the fastest, has the fastest growing rate of cancer in the U.S. Cancer in Iowa is worse than anywhere else in the U.S. So if you're listening to this program and you're thinking, hey, maybe I'd like to move somewhere else, I'm going to guess that what I just did, what I just told you, is going to be a strong disincentive for moving to Iowa. I don't blame you. You know, there are other states that have higher rates around the country. Nebraska, Illinois, Minnesota, Indiana, Kansas. Well, what do they all have in common? Let me see. Midwest, farm country, chemical applications, pesticides. Also on the list of states with a high and growing rate, West Virginia and Kentucky. So according to a publication, Investigate Midwest, America's farmers and farm workers, their families and neighbors, are being diagnosed with cancer at rates higher than the national average. So a growing body of research indicates that pesticides are partly to blame. And I wonder if the word partly will eventually be changed to mainly to blame. Again, it's hard to know, but look at the data. Look where the incidences are bad. And again, Iowa's the worst. And we probably have the highest concentration of agricultural operation anywhere in the country, here in our state. So looking at the chart that Investigate Midwest includes, most of the 500 counties with the highest pesticide use per square mile are located in the Midwest. 60% of those counties also had cancer rates higher than the national average of 460 cases per 100,000 people. And that was an analysis of data from both the U.S. Geological Survey and the National Cancer Institute. So this is a public health crisis. And it's being ignored by state and federal officials. Actually, not just ignored by them, but aided by them. And one problem here in Iowa has been the unwillingness of state government to dig into the contamination of our water system. And we saw that kind of came to a head a few years ago when three counties north of Des Moines, three counties that are in the kind of the headwaters of the Raccoon River, which supplies a lot of the water for what, almost a fourth of the state's population, maybe 20% at least. Our former waterworks director, Bill Stowe, filed a lawsuit against those three counties for not doing enough to control the flow of water, meaning this is why we have the highest, the most expensive nitrate removal system in the country here in Iowa. It's why we have, in part, the highest cancer rate. You know, I think the people most at risk are those on the front lines in the counties, in the rural areas where they're getting frequent exposure to these chemicals. But again, not only did the state not do anything about it, they decided that voluntary compliance with pollution control was the way to go. Well, you know, it's not. It's clearly not working. And good news, I told you I'd get to that. A report just out last week by the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement. Now, if you don't know who Harkin is, he was our former U.S. Senator, Tom Harkin. Amazing man, great work. Strong environmentalist and also a strong advocate for sanity in rural policies. So the report out just last week shows that Iowa's voluntary approach to cleaning up our water is a failure. We knew that. But now we've got some real solid documented evidence to that effect. The report determined that regulations on fertilizers, animal feeding operations, meaning CAFOs, and agricultural drainage, among other things, those are policies that would need to be changed to improve water quality and public health in Iowa. So this report by the Harkin Institute is a follow-up to a comprehensive report done here in Polk County in central Iowa about water quality that was released last summer. So a quote from Adam Shriver, he's the Institute's Director of Wellness and Nutrition Policy. He said, quote, a set of policies that the report contains a set of policies that, if followed, would dramatically improve Iowa's waterways to protect the health of current and future generations. We'll see where it goes, but I'm pretty sure that we're not going to see action by the current state legislature because they are totally in the pocket of corporate ag and corporate ag does not want to change. They seem to be indifferent to the reality that cancer rates are so high in the upper Midwest, indifferent to the fact that their chemicals are poisoning us. Anyway, you know, the report is really good news because it's now it's out there by a former U.S. senator, and it's well documented, well researched, and is presenting information that you can't ignore anymore. So going forward into the next election cycle, I think this is going to be probably the top issue in Iowa and maybe some other states as well.